You're listening to the Seed Stories podcast, powered by Beantown Media Ventures. This is episode one. Today, we're talking to Niccolo De Masi, the founder and CEO of Glu Mobile, and the man behind the wildly successful Kim Kardashian Hollywood game. Questions for you. You've been involved in the mobile content space since you were at Monster Mob in the early 2000s. Since then, mobile content and gaming has gone through a fascinating evolution. It's enabled Glu and other players in this space to be really incredibly successful. Can you tell us what you saw early on in terms of the way things were headed? Maybe shed some light on how fellow entrepreneurs can track the trends and time their ventures really accordingly as they're looking at the trends that are happening in a space like mobile gaming.
Sure. Well, as you know, Glu is my second games company, second public company, third mobile entertainment company I've run the past 11 years. And I've actually been riding the same trend for all 11 years, which is about fundamentally getting a computer in your pocket. I never doubted that we would have powerful entertainment devices that were mobile and something that we could carry around, whether it's called a ThinkPad or a Palm or a smartphone or a phone. I think, you know, consumers, the vast majority of consumers want one device that does everything. We used to have a big debate in the early 2000s about whether or not people were going to use an iPod and a phone. And to some extent, people have the same debate today with, what else a phone can do, whether it's for gameplay, whether, not consumers want multiple devices in the living room. And, you know, my perspective is, you know, I and most consumers are pretty lazy. We want it to be simple. We want it to be easy. And as a result of that, the winning hardware factor, I think, for, you know, mobility is going to be a phone-like computer. Things are unpredictable in the short term, but in the long term, they actually are fairly predictable when you have anything that's riding an exponential development curve, as the hardware industry has done, you know, with Moore's Law, quite frankly, in all of its different forms. So my general career has followed the trajectory of entertainment on your phone, taking advantage of, you know, more powerful CPUs, GPUs, more impressive screens, more impressive resolution, frame rate, etc. And of course, what that's allowed to happen is, you know, you can today play basically a last generation console game, you know, on your phone, tablet, etc., which no one would have dreamed of, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, were you not a believer in Moore's Law. So right. I would say that, you know, for entrepreneurs starting up, the trick on this one is not being too early. So running out of money is usually a much bigger problem than being a fast follower, right? So not being too early is important. At the same time, you can absolutely bet on, in my opinion, hardware always advancing and always having a lot of variety when it comes to mobile devices, because consumers are looking for both fashion and utility, and there's many different ways of combining fashion and utility. When I started at Glu, we bet big on the Android ecosystem, not just iOS, because I'd been doing this a while, and it's kind of like the car market. You know, there's not going to be one car, not going to be one car model. It's not like the PC market. People want certain sense of style, they want a certain sense of utility, and they want it all put together in a pretty simple form. So I would predict for entrepreneurs starting out that this is going to be a vibrant space for, you know, many decades to come because of those factors.
Makes a lot of sense. This also ties into a comment that you made I saw recently, where you were saying, you know, mobile devices are really the future of gaming. I'm guessing you view Glu as a disruptor to the entire gaming industry, the EAs and the Sonys of the world. You know, how do you see that kind of playing out as we move forward? Will mobile game players really start to compete with these incumbents in the space?
Yeah, so it depends which market research you read. But I think it's definitely the case that, you know, this year, next year, there is going to be as much revenue generated globally off of mobile gaming devices as there is in the console space. But remember that, there's markets like China and Korea where there isn't nearly as big a console market, right? So consoles were just allowed into China, you know, a year ago. So what really is happening is that mobile is already dominant in all emerging markets. It's dominant probably in Asia overall. Console probably still makes more money in the U.S. than mobile devices are, but it's catching up quickly. I actually don't view ourselves as disrupting companies like EA and Activision because they're both investing heavily. You know, Activision just bought King, the maker of Candy Crush, for $5 or $6 billion. EA's had a big mobile division for years, and it's actually spent billions of dollars building that and acquiring that space. Sony, though, for sure. I mean, Sony, PlayStation, Nintendo, you know, they're having a much better ride on this console cycle than people predicted as recently as a year ago. But I think what's going to actually happen is that console will be flat, mobile continues to grow in the next, you know, decade. But game experiences have to be tailored to each platform. So, you know, if you're playing a shooter or a sports game, in the U.S., the majority of those players and those spenders are probably still on a current generation console device. If you're in Asia, you're playing on your phone, maybe you're PC in an online game or in an internet cafe. But over the fullness of time, the more interesting trend for Glue is actually on what we call the quad screen convergence that Apple and Google and Amazon and Microsoft are driving, and even Samsung to some extent. Those five companies are big enough to have a meaningful play not only on phones but tablets, laptops, desktop devices, and in the living room. So we actually see ourselves as following Apple and Google, particularly, who are our biggest distribution partners, wherever they go. So Apple TV, Google TV, we already have our games on the Mac Store, of course, all phones and tablets. But there'll be a day when I think there'll be, you know, Chrome gaming and Apple TV and Google TV gaming, and we think the same app stars are going to go with the same billing relationship everywhere. And so, yes, in many ways, Glue will be taking our free-to-play gaming model wherever our partners, you know, want us to distribute.
Right. I imagine that the multi-platform approach was part of the pitch to Kim Kardashian and other stars to get them on board. Can you take us through kind of that pitch process and what led to Kim kind of, you know, teaming up with you guys?
Sure. You know, fundamentally, I suppose, I mean, Glue has 800 people, but I was the sort of champion of the Kim deal, sort of my idea, my deal. And ultimately, you know, Kim and I work together closely on sometimes a daily basis to keep that game current. You know, there was admittedly some skepticism, I think, in some corners of Glue that it would work. But fundamentally, what we were doing in 2013 when we first approached her was combining a proven monetization engine, a game called Stardom Hollywood, Stardom the A-List that we had launched twice before in 2012 and 13. We were combining that with her brand, her IP, her marketing, her authenticity. And it's been a wonderful example of kind of 1 + 1 = 10, whereby, you know, we've had many more people install the game, we've had many more people retain in the game. And we've brought a whole new audience into gaming who don't consider themselves to be gamers. I mean, it's a female demographic playing Kim Kardashian Hollywood. The super majority of women that are playing it probably don't consider themselves gamers, and they wouldn't have played any game had it not been Kim's, ultimately. So, you know, when I first talked to Kim, she got the idea really quickly that, you know, we could encapsulate her, do something good for her brand, certainly make a meaningful income stream for her and us. I think we've all been pleasantly surprised by, you know, the extent to which we were rapidly successful out of the gate. But in a lot of ways, you know, Glue has been the pioneer of gaming around people as opposed to brands. You know, we've signed up Katy Perry, Britney Spears, Nicki Minaj, Jason Statham. And all of these games are coming out, you know, the next, you know, 6 months, if they're not out already. Katy Perry is coming out December 17th. And I think you're going to see this as an enduring trend, actually. So when I look at trends that Glue is on, kind of like with Moore's Law on the handset side, I think the personalization of media is permanent, very powerful. You know, Kim's got 120 million social followers. Her promoting something is dramatically more powerful than even a James Bond brand, a Mission Impossible brand, a Terminator brand. We've made games for all of those movie franchises. None of them have done as well as the Kim game. And we obviously think we'll do the same with Katy Perry and the rest of our celebrity partners who, in totality, we've now signed up 1.1 billion celebrity social followers to support Glu Games in the next 5 years.
Yeah, it's impressive. Obviously, some other gaming companies have tried to replicate what you're doing. You could argue that they're dealing with more D-list celebrities. But how do you view kind of taking the influencer, celebrity, you know, individual brand angle if you're a startup, you know, and trying to capitalize on that? Do you feel like startups of all sizes can try to go after influencers, celebrities? Is it something that, you know, only a brand as big as Glu can try to do? You know, is it a valid strategy, I guess, that others could try to take?
I think marketing is going to become about people and influencers. It's simply a case of scale. I think that media is becoming personalized as well. So, you know, we're going to have more of the, you know, shock jock Glenn Beck phenomenon, right? Howard Stern, Glenn Beck have already taken their audiences effectively out of conventional broadcast and proven you can build a business around that. And I think you're going to see the same thing with all forms of media, frankly, going forward. So it's going to be much less about CNN, much more about, you know, the Katy Perry show. And if Tim Cook says the future of TV is apps, I actually think the future of all media is going to be about apps, whether you're a magazine, whether or not you're a movie, whether it's all going to be interactive apps. And that's what Apple and Google are trying to do with their, you know, TV plays. You know, in terms of, as you put it, sort of D-list celebrities, look, I mean, there's a continual escalator from people that have a million social followers to ones that have 100 million or more. Glu, because of our scale and our balance sheet, you know, we can choose to work with people who only have really 100 million followers or more if you're female. And if you're male, you know, Jason Statham, 50 million makes him one of the 5 or 10 most followed men on the planet. You believe it or not, women are better at inculcating and nurturing big social audiences, which is why most of the top 10 most followed people in the world are actually female musicians, believe it or not. You know, Taylor Swift, Katy Perry, et cetera. But there is power all the way down the stack. And I think that there, you know, we're doing efficient influencer marketing campaigns with people like PewDiePie, who at one point supported our Kim game. And I think that startups can absolutely align themselves with very focused participants in social media that are relevant for what they're trying to do. And I think that's really interesting, actually. If you look at the YouTube influencer marketplace and you look at the, you know, look at every social channel, whether it's Snapchat, Instagram, you know, Facebook, there's going to be pockets of people that are very focused on your genre and that have effectively aggregated an audience on that. And for sure, you can get involved with smaller influencers at really sensible pricing for what they can bring to bear. Some of them, I think, you know, can even be effectively, you know, sweat equity marketing partners. And I would certainly advise startups to consider those avenues.
Great. That's great advice. So you had to pitch, you know, people like Kim Kardashian, other celebrities. Is there a piece from that that you can take towards, you know, pitching an investor? Obviously, you're a public company, but, you know, as we talk to founders all the time, you know, can they take kind of, you know, similar ideas and tips from pitching influencers or brands and apply those to getting investors on board, venture capitalists on board with their ideas?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, in some ways, all pitches are the same, right? You know, a friend of mine's a VC in Colorado who likes to say, you know, he teaches the Daniel School of Business there, and he goes, you know, everyone's got to do the same three things. You've got to have an idea, figure out how you're going to fill the idea, and then you've got to sell, right?
Right.
And so it doesn't really matter what stage of company or what the idea is. You're doing those three activities in some way, shape, or form. The level of challenge changes, right? You know, it's sort of higher class problems the bigger your business becomes, but you're still worried about scarce resources. As I always like to tell my own company, it's like, look, Glu's got 800 people and a couple $100 million in the bank. We have scarce resources compared to Microsoft. Microsoft itself has scarce resources. They don't have every single engineer in the world working for them, nor does Google, Facebook, Apple, et cetera. So everyone always has to budget, plan, and prioritize. Startups are going to do the same thing. Of course, once you're through the sort of seed and A round, you know, it starts to become about revenue traction. But before that, it's really credibility, right, about why the idea is good and why you are the person to fill it. And then you got to get out there and convince people that you have those ingredients for success whilst showing consistent milestones for success, right? So all businesses are about milestones, whether you're a public company going tracking every quarter, whether or not you are, you know, a seed stage business is just trying to show that you have proof of concept with a product. At the end of the day, it's always about meeting and beating whatever the expectations are you set.
Right. That makes sense. Moving back into marketing, obviously with your games, and you touched on before, you kind of have a built-in marketing mechanism in partnering with these celebrities with huge social followings. Are there any other aspects of marketing, you know, that you push with Glu Mobile, or are you really focused on social in terms of your marketing? You know, do any traditional TV advertising as well?
So we try it all. We spend about 15% of our revenue overall on user acquisition, which is mostly digital banner ads, video clips, pre-roll, post-roll, you know, all the stuff that frankly comes up on apps that you may have on your phone already. So we do mostly direct response marketing. We have done some influencer campaigns. We obviously have signed up, you know, I would say some of the most, if not most of the most popular people in the world, and kind of cornered the market on that. And so we think that that provides a lot of value underpinning Glu's roadmap in the next couple of years. But yes, we've tried TV. We've tried outdoor. I mean, ultimately, you know, it's not as measurable. But I think people are actually going to probably recognize that TV has been much more durable than people predicted even a couple of years ago. And there are gaming companies that are absolutely looking at how you can leverage the creation of a great, you know, brand ad for TV, that if you can hit the emotional chords right, it can do a lot of great things in terms of, you know, going viral online, et cetera, as well. And so sort of integrating the two worlds is something that I do believe is powerful, and I do think you're going to see ever more gaming companies piling into it. We ran a Kim Kardashian TV commercial, and ultimately, you know, we got, I'd say, sort of break-even results. It wasn't a slam dunk, but it wasn't discouraging either. And, you know, I think it's totally possible that Glu will revisit this space, you know, in 2016 and beyond.
Interesting. I had a question, too. Obviously, you have, you know, a much bigger budget in terms of pushing, you know, app discovery and downloads. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were saying, you know, they believe we're hitting kind of peak app in terms of, there's so many apps out there. People don't have the time to download. It's impossible to stand out on the App Store. Any quick thoughts on in terms of, you know, hitting peak app?
So I view the ecosystem as follows. You know, when there's new hardware out, a new platform out, as I'm sure you guys have seen, and as the old joke goes, two types of companies figure out new hardware platforms first. Porn companies and game companies, right?
Right.
And that, I mean, less on the porn front because Apple and Google don't allow it, but game companies certainly jumped on board, you know, mobile smartphone computing ahead of everybody else. And so between 2009 and 2013, I think games ruled the roost and had a pretty easy ride of the dominating the charts. There was a, you know, 2 years ago, I'd say almost all of the top 25 to 50 free apps in the Apple Store were games. A year ago, it was probably 50%. Today, it's probably only 10% or 20%. So it's halved the last couple of years. But what's actually driving that, aside from, you know, there's probably tweaks to Apple's ranking algorithms. You know, they count re-downloads now as well as new downloads whenever every time you upgrade your OS. And that tends to favor what I call app staples, you know, whether or not it's utility apps, whether or not it's, you know, Facebook. You've got people effectively recognizing that as the world goes mobile, every single app has to be a competitive platform for a consumer's time. You know, people have the same number of apps on their phone kind of the world over. I think it's, you know, 20-ish or something, or 27 apps or something. You know, Facebook takes up 1 in 5 minutes of people's time, I think, for a lot of users in the US. You know, there are better and better non-game mobile experiences coming out, whether or not those are magazines, whether or not it's Yelp, Instagram, Snapchat, all these kind of things didn't really exist 2 years ago, to the same extent, certainly. And so what I think is actually happening is a maturation of the overall interactive computing markets. What's happened is the world's gone mobile. Everyone has recognized they can't grow online if they don't have a big mobile presence. And so people have invested very aggressively the last 5 years in their mobile experience. And you're seeing now the full spectrum of the world going mobile, whereby it doesn't matter what you're looking for, you can find a better and better experience. And like with the online PC space, you're all competing for the same time. Now, more consumer time has moved mobile than the advertising revenues have actually moved. And that's something you guys probably see in your own business. There's a big gap between time moving mobile and ad dollars moving mobile. And there's still a lot more ad dollars going on PC online than on mobile online. And I think that will change. There's probably a 2 or 3 or even 4 or 5 year lag to that happening. But I predicted by 2020, you're going to see a lot more revenue generated from advertising in the mobile ecosystem as effectively the big ad spenders recognize they got to go where people are putting their time. But to sort of finish off on this topic, ultimately, I actually think you're going to see ever more apps and ever higher quality apps. And I think that life is going to be more challenging for small companies that don't have brand power, marketing power, real scale to get discovery, which leads you right back to your prior question, which is how can you punch through? Well, social influencer is going to be a big piece of it, but fundamentally so is going to be building a compelling platform opportunity in whatever your new company is.
Got you. Great advice. Finally, I know you only have a couple minutes left. Just one quick question on, you know, you're obviously leading a company, been an entrepreneur. Any piece of advice that you've gotten along the way that really sticks out with you? And then I guess secondly, you know, any one piece of advice you'd give another, you know, founder out there starting, you know, a mobile app company today?
Sure. Generally speaking, you know, I think one of the most important things to do, whether or not you're running a public company or a startup, is figure out whether or not you're going to move forward, as the expression goes, one thing a mile or 100 things an inch. And on whatever time frame you're operating, whether or not it's a month or a quarter or a year or to your next fundraise round, you got to take the same approach. What's going to do my shareholders and my business, you know, better for ourselves? You know, should we move one headline thing forward a long way, really focus, or should we move a number of things forward an inch? Usually the answer is pick one thing to move forward a mile. I think, you know, the OKR system that Google and Intel use is a great example of that in a lot of ways. But fundamentally, that I found that that has been sort of the principle of management that sticks with me the most, along with the second thing would be sort of connecting the short term and long term. You know, what you're moving forward a mile has to connect to the long term every time you set yourself a goal. In terms of the sort of app ecosystem, yeah, I mean, it's getting ever tougher because of, you know, the competition, the quality, the world going mobile. I think that there's a lot of people chasing, obviously, you know, sort of unicorn so-called business opportunities. There's a lot of hype in the marketplace from entrepreneurs saying they're raising money at high prices when in fact it's really 2x, 3x liquidation debt is what's going on. Ultimately, there's a lot of enthusiasm in the private markets for sort of 3 or 4 types of businesses. Either you need to create a two-sided market. So by that, I mean, you know, there's buyers and sellers and you're matching them. That's what Uber does. That's what Lending Club does. Two-sided markets are going along with Airbnb does. That goes a long way if you can dominate a small niche and then expand. There's, of course, social messaging networks and so on are still relatively hot, although they can't all win. And then there's fundamental scientific breakthrough. You know, Tesla is a good example of that one. So if you think about starting your own app business up, you should think along the same lines. Where can you build a barrier to entry? Focus on something small enough to monopolize it before you expand. You want a small market where you are the monopolist and the winner, and you can build up the expertise to really crowd out other people. Once you do that, you can move on to bigger and better. But smart, start small, start focused, start niche, helps you get that YouTube influencer on board. And try and think about whether or not you've got, you know, a two-sided market you can dominate, whether or not you've got a fundamental scientific breakthrough or engineering breakthrough of some kind, or you've, you know, last but not least, got some kind of social interaction layer that you can apply.
A great final point. Niccolo De Masi, Chairman and CEO of Glu Mobile, thanks so much for joining us on Seed Stories and sharing some of your insight today.
Nice talking to you. Have a great day.
Take care.
Take care.
The Seed Stories podcast is produced for your enjoyment by Beantown Media Ventures, and show notes can be found at www.beantownmv.com/seedstories. You can listen to us on iTunes and SoundCloud and follow us on Twitter at BeantownMV. And once again, we'd appreciate your ratings and reviews on iTunes.